Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 662. Getting closer to draft season. We actually have real baseball later tonight, which is crazy to think about. We're getting closer to draft season, so that means we start digging deeper in the player pool. We're going to have some late-round starting pitchers. In order to help me do this, to break them down, is a kind of a pitcher guru out there, one might say. He's done some work in the pitching realm, and he's also a person you hear three, four, five times a week on Sleeper and the Bust. You know, he's a Twitch guy. He writes some articles over at Fangraphs and Rotographs. Does a lot of cool stuff. You can find him on Twitter at Spore. Paul Spore, how you doing, my friend?
Bubba, I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. I'm actually waking up for the game too, so I got my alarm set already for 4:30 Central, and I'm getting up. I want to watch that game live. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm jealous. I wanted to wake up early, but out here,
it's a little bit of a different bird out there out west. Like, and I'm a night owl, or I've been a night owl. I've actually kind of shifted my ways, but my night owl self, if I was on West Coast time, I would have just stayed up.
Yeah, for sure.
But I can go to bed tonight at like 9 Central, get some actual rest, get up, and then, you know, I'll have a little bit of a slag in the middle of the day, I'm sure, for being up a couple hours early, but it won't be too bad.
Yeah, you and Mason can record an early podcast because that guy doesn't sleep, so you're good.
Exactly. I don't think he's ever slept. He must take like pills that just recharge him, or he takes spinach, you know, like Popeye, just to keep him going. Because I don't know when he sleeps. He's available at all times.
Yes, he is. Like I just envision, you know, the flight back from New York. They take red eyes, and I'm like, that's when I try to sleep. He probably just sits there and, you know, doesn't sleep at all. Watches movies.
Exactly. Exactly. Crazy,
man. Before we start talking about news and notes and some pictures here, Paul. Pretty much everyone knows who you are, listens to my show, but just in case, let them know where they can find you and what you got going on.
You can find me on Twitter. Sorry, I'm not calling it X. Cry about it, Elon. At Spore, S-P-O-R-E-R, on Twitch at the same handle, and of course over at Fangraphs, the fantasy side, of course, at Rotographs. It's actually not rotographs.com. That's why I rarely call it that. So it's fantasy.fangraphs.com, or you just go to the front page, click on the Rotographs side. You'll find mine and my co-host Justin Mason's work, our podcast, The Sleeper and the Bust. We got our draft kit up with all of our rankings, sleepers, busts. Actually, we call them breakouts because, you know, the term sleeper, everyone's like, well, that's not a sleeper, because everyone knows everybody these days. I get it. But you know what I mean when we're talking breakout and sleeper, right? Guys that are undervalued against their draft price. So, yeah, find all that over at Fangraphs now. Big draft weekend coming up. Bubba, are you going to Vegas?
I will not be going to Vegas, unfortunately. I wanted
me
to.
Neither.
But, yeah, still, this never seems to work out. Like, I'm not drafting. I don't draft main events. I'm not as cool as everybody else. But
oh, you're not doing main event. Okay.
Yeah, so I wanted to go just to hang out, but then I'm like, yeah. Probably not going to happen this week.
It's a lot to kind of do that too, especially at this time of year as well. And that's the main reason I'm not going, is I also have a full-time job, or pretty full-time. It's actually the time it takes is about of a full-time job with Out of the Park Baseball, a video game simulator. And so between that and Fangraphs, it's just, I don't want to be cooped up in a hotel working anyway.
Yep.
So I took this year March off as far as travel. And it's already been a big stress off my back. As much as I missed everyone in Tout last week in New York, life has been smoother because I'm not having to work while on the road, which is very difficult.
I totally understand that. Makes a ton of sense, and part of the reason I won't be going. So I get it. Let's talk some recent news. Just a couple bits here. Like, for those that sleep under a rock that listens to my stuff, I do my Substack. I daily, you know, hit up the news and give you guys little tidbits out there. So all the little things you can get over there. Let's talk about the big splashes, though, Paul. Blake Snell, we finally, you know, it only took till March 18th, you know, almost, you know, right opening day. He signs with the Giants, which is great. It seems like he might be stretched out farther than we thought. What are your thoughts on this? Because he's gone over the last week in the ADP we're going to use. His men picks 52. His ADP is around 75. I feel like he's going to start creeping back to 52. Could be wrong. So what's your thoughts on this Blake Snell situation?
Fully agree with the fact that he's just going to move back up. This is a phenomenon we see all the time with guys that are free agents. Once they get signed somewhere, they have a little bit of a bump up, whether it's a high-end player like Snell or even a mid-tier, low-tier type of guy. Like, let's say if JD Martinez finally landed somewhere, he would get signed. He hasn't gone anywhere, right?
No, it's
okay,
crazy.
Yeah, so like it's insane, some of the guys that aren't signed. You know, I love Snell. I think he's a wonderful pitcher. It is a little bit nerve-wracking with the way he kind of walks guys on purpose. And I believe him when he says that, right? Like, he says it's been a purposeful thing that if he gets behind with a guy, he's not going to give in. So he's going to throw maybe some junk to try to get them to chase it. And if not, re-rack and start with the next guy. It's just a tightrope walk, though, right? A little bit less BABIP luck, and all of a sudden his ERA is pushing the upper threes, right? So you get a bunch of strikeouts. I've been trying to convince Justin that your Giants aren't as terrible as he thinks. I don't know where you come out. He thinks you guys are terrible. And I'm like, I don't know. I think it's like a decent lineup. The rotation is scary. So Snell's a great second there to go behind Webb. And then from there, I am a little bit nervous about Harrison Hicks. And I don't know who's pitching. Like, are they bringing back Matt Cain for the fifth starter's role? Like, who the heck they got? So, you know, this, it's a little bit suspect on the rotation, but I think it's a solid team. The Giants are always kind of somewhat competitive. So it's a good fit for the park. There's a lot to like. He can attack. You know, Snell can attack in that ballpark, knowing that he's not going to get eaten up by homers. So the problem that I always had was he never really got a discount. Even his free agency discount was a little bit pricier than I wanted to pay for Snell. But I understand it. He's the reigning NL Cy Young. So he hasn't been a guy that I've been getting a whole bunch. I do wish him well. He's a guy that I like. We have a little bit of a friendly interaction on Twitch, so I don't want to ever overstate our friendship, like we're best buds or anything. But, you know, we're chill. Good dude. I root for him like crazy, but I haven't had him in a lot of fantasy drafts.
Yeah, I have maybe one or two shares super early in draft season because I'm a degenerate that drafts like in November, December.
We both are, yes.
Yeah, and so like at that point, you figured he would have signed by like January
or something. Exactly.
Like, you wouldn't have expected this to be an issue. So yeah, I was like drafting him then, and as things kind of progressed, I'm like, yeah, we're going to pump the brakes a bit on this one. And
it's
and
so scary.
Because look at Jomo, still not signed. Like, what are we doing here, people?
Blows my mind. Like, Texas, what are you doing? Come on, yeah. Texas. You just won the World Series, I understand, but he was part of it. And I don't know how he's not such a perfect fit for them that they don't just bring him back with all the injuries they have, all the uncertainty. I still think that that's the perfect fit. I don't know, man. Listen, I respect Boris. I think he is the best agent out there. I think he did these dudes dirty a little bit.
Way
like,
this
is bad.
He's having a rough season. Like, he's crushed in years past. There's no denying that. There's a reason why he's got mansions everywhere. But there's a lot of tweets out there these days about this year's crop of Boris clients not going to be too happy with the boy when all things are said and done. So we'll see. Yeah, I like the Snell deal. Maybe I'll grab a share in these last few drafts I have, but time will tell. Relievers, closers more, in fact. Last year was an easy year, Paul. You know, no real turnover. It was like, draft your guys and roll. As long as you had enough of them, you were good. Things are starting to shake a little different. Devin Williams last week goes down with a massive, you know, fracture in his back, which is not good. Then we get some devastating news. A top five closer in Johan Duran is going to be on the IL with an oblique injury. And as we know, oblique injuries can linger. So how are you approaching this Duran situation?
Sadly, this is very bad. I'm really not happy for this. I was telling you this before we came on. I'm a pay for saves guy. I'm out there buying the big closers because I don't want to be in the in-season rat race. I forget who says it. I mean, I'm sure multiple people say it, but I forget who like coined it. But you're going to pay for saves one way or the other, at the draft table or in season. I prefer to just do it at the draft table, get it done. The top-end closers have been great payouts the last several years. You know, if you got burned early by the Edwin Diaz thing, that's a fluke. That's not don't pay for saves. That's, you know, He celebrated wrong. So I've been paying for these top guys. Well, they're dropping like flies. So I'm looking at your boy now, Camilo Duval, as somebody who's like my number four all of a sudden. You know, if I don't get Hader or Diaz or something, I mean, I'm trying to think who even is the other guy. Oh, Classe. So if I don't get one of those three, you know, it's Duval. I do like some of those mid-tier guys, your Fairbankses, Munoz, Helsleys, those guys that look like they could save 35 if they really just got to stick in there all year, but also stayed healthy. All three of those guys have had health issues, and that comes with throwing 100 all the time. So it's a treacherous landscape right now, but I tell you what, I got my main on Saturday, and Jeff Zimmerman, if you're listening, close your ears. Don't pick my guys, you jerk. We're in the same league, which is a huge bummer because he's an amazing player. Yep. But I'm going to come out with two guys that are name closers. I don't know who they're going to be right now. I had my like eight top guys. Four of them are now smoked, and we're about to talk about Romano too. So as far as Duran, which is who you asked me about, he will not be on my board at the main event. There's only seven reserve slots. There's no IL at the main event. I don't want to invite major injury on my main event team. It's just not something I'm interested in. So a moderate oblique strain, that could be 6 to 8 weeks, I feel like. That's a big deal. And I think like people are kind of understating it. He was somebody I was ready to go at number four, off the board now.
Yep, I had him and Duval. Like you just mentioned, you moved Duval up. I had them like 4A, 4B. I was never going to argue the two. If you wanted to pick your poison, I think Duran's filthier. Duval might get more volume just because the Giants, the way they do things. Who knows? But these oblique things, like you nailed it. I've been telling people or writing about it. I said, at the best, we get an early May, I think. At the best, you get an early May. Because these oblique injuries, they linger, soft tissue. There's no direct timetable. It's not a broken bone. You didn't have surgery. Like, there's no real rhyme or reason. It's just when the guy heals. And then do they bring him back too early and he re-aggravates it? Do they do these things? We see now with hamstrings and obliques, and it's just a gigantic mess. So
yes, it
sucks. Griffin Jacks should be the guy that gets the first spot. That's a guy in DC's should have been picked up already, but keep an eye now in your redrafts. Brock Stewart's the other name that's been thrown around. Lots of filth in the strikeout department. Probably the number two in that option. But curious to see where they go because I'm going to go look at ADP later tonight from maybe Monday and Tuesday's drafts because over the weekend, Jax was 332 ADP. It's going to be a little different. I'd suggest
that's gonna be a little bit higher. I think he'll be up there. Now he is nasty. Griffin Jax is absolutely nasty, and there could be a situation like you're talking about with Duran when he comes back and they take him easy that Jax could still be getting saved. So, you know, even if you thought Duran was like a 6 week guy, he might not come back and be the guy day one. They might just spot him in and still keep Jax because Jax had an amazing year last year. So he could be nasty.
100%. All right, you mentioned it with Romano. Jordan Romano came out on Tuesday morning that Romano's got elbow tightness, something along those lines. Depends on what verbiage you want to look at. It's going to get a elbow inflammation, going to get a de-inflammation shot, they said. That was a lot of words for not going to a Holiday Inn Express or anything like that. But he's going to be down and out for a bit is what it comes down to. And the worst part is his backup, Eric Swanson, similar thing. He's down and out now. Brutal. So both those reports came out on Tuesday, which means Yimi Garcia is maybe the next guy up. How are you approaching the Toronto situation?
That's going to be a bit of a pass there. By the way, not to be Mr. Name Pronunciation Correction, but they always say Jimmy on the broadcast.
Oh, so I like that even better, actually. Yeah, now that you tell me that, that's even like YMI as Jimmy. It's pretty awesome.
The Y as the J. So I believe it is Jimmy Garcia. I guess I'm gonna trust the Blue Jays broadcaster there. But yeah, like he is scary. The one thing about him, you know, he kind of reminds me of Emilio Pagan. He's always got this nasty stuff, can get a bunch of strikeouts and look great, but home runs are the biggest issue. And that's literally the last thing you want out of a closer because that's the quickest way to blow a game. So that makes me really nervous. I'm probably just going to pass on the Toronto bullpen at this point, unless we somehow got some good news about Romano. I doubt it. And again, I'm not inviting injury onto the main event roster. Your mileage may vary if you have IL slots. I totally understand. But just for my purposes, off the board, can't do it. And I don't really want the backup because I don't trust Jimmy.
Yep, I'm with you. Jimmy would be a late situation there. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'm pretty much out. Yeah, they're saying, okay, so Romano, right elbow inflammation, MRI showed no structural damage, getting anti-inflammatory injection. Eric Swanson has a right forearm tightness. So you know how that goes.
That would have encouraged me, by the way, to go for Swanson. He would have been intriguing, and I would have made the pivot the way I am with Griffin Jacks. But with him being down, and now it's Jimmy Garcia, or I wonder, you know who I wonder could be the sneak? If you want to just take a look with your last pick, what about Nate Pearson?
That's somebody even last year I drafted in DCs with hoping that he'd find like a way to the back end. I'm with you. He's looked pretty good this spring compared to previous years. Yeah.
He missed some bats. You know, it could be. He always kind of felt like he was going to have reliever risk anyway. It's looking more and more like he's not going to be able to start. Maybe this is his chance to really make a statement in the bullpen, become the guy for a little bit. He'll turn the job back over to Romano when he comes back. There's no doubt about that. But he could then be the big stopper. And so that could be kind of interesting. So maybe Nate Pearson, those of you in like an AL only, I would definitely take a look at Nate Pearson. And then like a 15-team mixer, which is what the main event is. Maybe he's the last flyer and then he's my first cut or something if that doesn't work out.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I've told people, like even in my OCs, I do three OCs. My last like two or three picks, I almost just take spec relievers just to see how the rest of the spring goes. I looked at my first OC I did last week. My last pick, Chris Martin, looking pretty strong. Kenley Jansen's going.
Yeah.
So does it always work that way? No. But you want
every once in a while
or something, like life's looking good all of a sudden. So we'll wait and see. There's going to be sadly more news over the next week or so as rosters shrink and more injuries occur. And because the weird thing is right now, Paul, as you know, is, you know, guys were getting ready for spring and they kind of got tired of getting ready for spring. Now they're trying to ramp up again, like that kind of weirdness. And
exactly.
Never good. Never good.
It's just part of the spring every year. It's the worst part, but the injuries crop up and you just got to be out looking out for landmines, basically.
Yep. Just cross your fingers and pray if you're religious. All right. Let's talk starting pitchers now. I said I was going to just do post 200 because that's easy. If I put 190, I want to sneak one pitcher in there to talk about in case anybody wanted to look real close to what I was doing. We're using ADP from 316 to 318. That's over the weekend of the NPCOC. So about 20-ish drafts, give or take. And so we're going to start with Sticks, Tristan McKenzie, because he has been an anomaly of mine. It's ironic that you're on the show, actually, to discuss this
as the
comparisons. But like I put out a tweet last week, like, are we drafting him? Are we not? Like, it's just this whole thing, because we've seen him be really good, limited innings the last year. Spring, we've seen some good, a little bit of rough, but pretty much more good than bad. So what's your thoughts on McKenzie? Because you can get him at a 194 ADP right now.
Yeah, see, you mentioned that we have a lot in common with our body shape. You know, we have one distinct difference, and you guys can try to figure out what that is if you know what I look like and you know what he looks like. But other than that, we are dead ringers, 6'5", 165. So I know what my lanky ass would look like out there on the bump. And that's part of the issue, though. I don't think my body could withstand the rigors of starting in Major League Baseball, and that has been the case with Tristan McKenzie. But when he's good, he's really good. And like you said, we've seen some pretty nasty stuff again this spring. I think at this price point, I'm okay. And I got to be honest, and I'm not trying to backpat myself. I had plenty of misses last year. But after hitting on him big in 2022, then McKenzie was too expensive, and I passed everywhere. Now, I didn't think he was going to have 16 innings, but I worried about the injury piece. That was my biggest concern. So he's a guy, Tristan McKenzie, that I'm always going to want to buy the dip on because, you know, he might just have these kind of undulating sort of career where gets injured, price goes down. Has a great season, price goes up, and then you avoid. So now it's a down 194. You can maybe get him past pick 200 in some drafts. I'll take that shot because if it blows up again in your face, that's not a pick that's foundational to your ball club. So I'm back in on Sticks. And again, love seeing my body comp out there doing some big things. And I hope he can at least put up 135 innings. That would be enough at pick 200.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. That's why I posted the question last week. Just wanted to bring him up on the show because, like, we're seeing healthy Sticks at least this spring. We're seeing some signs of life with Sticks this spring. And the price seems much more palatable. It's kind of like the Byron Buxton of the pitching world.
Exactly.
You at least have a conversation. And, okay, if he struggles here, I can kind of suck it up and drop him anyways.
Yep.
Where it's a totally different ballgame. So just wanted to bring him up again for people to get your thoughts on that. Now we go post 200, pick 206, Brandon Fott, a person that I am extremely high on, but Nick Pollock has told me I'm possibly too ambitious on Brandon Fott. ADP's 206, so what's your thoughts on Fott?
I actually share your ambitiousness with Brandon Faught. I'm really, really intrigued by him. I love the way he kind of developed over the course of the year last season, including, you know, being really a big stalwart for them in the playoffs when they needed somebody to step up with Zach Gallen. And I'm still super intrigued by Brandon Faught. I obviously know that the biggest issue with him is the home run rate, but that's a fixable thing, right? That when a guy kind of has everything else in place but the home runs, I'm willing to bet on that. Look at somebody like a Bailey Ober, Joe Ryan, guys like that over in Minnesota. They kind of have that lingering issue, but everything else is pretty excellent and it's good enough to succeed. So Brandon Faught doesn't have to cut his home run rate down below one. He was at 2.1 last year, for those that don't know. That's way, 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 way too high. But if he can get it down to say like 1.3, that's still a little bit high, but it's workable because he doesn't give up too many hits generally when he's on. And again, he had some issues with it last year, up and down across his 96 innings. But when he's working, he's not giving up too many hits. He doesn't walk many guys and he misses bats. I really do think there's a potential step forward here for Brandon Faught. And I think he's priced to buy. So I understand the potential issues that Nick probably brought up with him, but I think a lot of that risk is covered in the price. If Brandon Faught was like what I call a playoff tax guy, somebody who really gets pushed up because they did well in the playoffs and he was going around pick 150, I'd be moving away. But past pick 200, I think Brandon Faught is somebody worth buying on this quality Diamondbacks club.
Yes, I have many a share of Brandon Faught right now. I'm actually shocked that the playoff tax did not take place
right
this season. That's been my thing I've been waiting for this whole time. So very surprised in that. Even on one of the things I'm like, a couple of things I'm big on. I'm big, he's already stretched out for a young pitcher. Innings is not a concern with him, which, yep, as you get deeper into the ADP pool, that becomes a question for most of these guys. The other thing with Brandon Faught that really gets me excited is you mentioned the swinging strike rate and everything. You know, he got yo-yoed last year. When he finally came back that third trip through, we saw it seemed like a whole new guy. The strikeout, absolutely, rates went up. The walk rates even dropped a bit. We could use a little more of the walk rate dropping, but we saw some, so that was good. I think there's just so much, and you know, development can continue to develop. I think there's a lot to like with a young arm. So I'm a Brandon Faught guy.
Love it.
Two picks later, got to bring him up for my buddy Ryan Bloomfield here. Christopher Sanchez. If there's any one person that Bloomfield would say is my guy, it's probably Christopher Sanchez. So what are your thoughts on Christopher Sanchez and that changeup he wields?
Well, I'd like to join the party there as putting him on my guy list. I'm a big, big fan of his. He was somebody I called out as a big second half breakout last year, and it came to fruition. So I join you guys in the love for Mr. Christopher Sanchez. He's on my breakouts again this year because he's priced to buy. He didn't really get a big push up, which I thought he would being part of Philadelphia. Now, he's more expensive than he was last year, don't get me wrong, but pick 208 is very affordable. And like we're saying with these guys, they can afford to bust on you, and it's not going to kill your season if they flop. You can move on from that. You can recover. So I can get a few of these guys, and we're going to talk about a few more that I absolutely adore, that if the things don't go right with the minor leaguers that are coming up and the guys who develop, we can replace them. So I'm willing to take this risk. I love a guy who's got a changeup ready to go, especially a left-hander against righties, because you know he's going to face a ton of right-handers. He's got the swing and miss stuff. He doesn't walk guys, has a little bit of a home run issue, kind of a similar theme here that we're talking about with Faught, but he's more in that Bailey Ober, Joe Ryan mold where he's already a little bit ready-made with the home run issue being the only flaw. If he cuts that at all, we're talking going to the moon. But even if he doesn't cut it, still very good mid-rotation guy. Love Christopher Sanchez. Happy to join you guys on that train.
Mr. Grouch in the chat asks, do you think the ceiling is for Sanchez, or is he more of a low floor guy?
Oh, no, I think the ceiling is remarkably high. Like, I think he could be an absolute monster. I am all in on Christopher Sanchez.
Yep, no, I'm with you there. I think he's another guy he has creeped up in ADP, we'll say that much, but still very affordable. Brian Bayo, he was my Bay last season. We saw some good things, much better this year. Already named the opening day starter for the Red Sox. Maybe it says more about the Red Sox, but still props to Bayo, who got the money also. His ADP is 216. He's been working on more pitches. I'm a fan of him. I'd love to see more strikeouts. Maybe that comes with the new arsenal. What's your thoughts on Brian Bayo?
Yeah, again, you know, I know people like disagreements and kind of battles on things here, but I'm not going to fake a disagreement with you. I think Brian Bello is a really intriguing pitcher. In fact, I got to be honest, I've made this interesting U-turn on the Boston Red Sox pitching this year. Last year, I couldn't stop dogging them out. Now, it was different pitchers too, so it's not these guys that I've all done a 180 on, but I just didn't really like the makeup of their pitching. I thought that was their biggest flaw and why they weren't going to compete in the division. Now, all of a sudden, I understand the division's still very tough, and I don't know that they're going to be able to fully compete because their offense is a little shaky, but I like their rotation. We're going to talk about another one of their guys in a moment who I love even more than Bayo. But I do believe there is enough in Bayo's arsenal to take the strikeout step up. 20% right now, that's pretty middling, but he doesn't walk guys. He's taken a full season around, you know, around the rotation. A full season is generally 162 innings so that you qualify for the ERA title, but we'll give him the credit for it because 157, 28 turns, he's shown that he can handle going through the entire season. So that's really crucial with somebody like Bayo, and like you were saying earlier, these young guys that haven't had to had don't have to have innings concerns, we can draft confidently, not worried that they're going to get yo-yoed around. So I like that for Bayo, even if he just puts a few extra points on the strikeout rate, let's say 22-23% paired with a few extra innings, say 175, that'll be enough to be viable with his strikeouts, let alone the fact that he throws 96, he has some good secondary stuff. He could get up to a strikeout per inning, but we don't need him to because he's got the great ground ball rate and just strong arsenal to kind of get through the rotation or through the lineup, excuse me, two times every game and then maybe into that third time to where he can be a consistent six inning guy. I think Brian Bayo, at the very least, can improve his ratios next year, even if the strikeout rate stays mediocre. At the very best, everything jumps up and he really hits another level and becomes, say, a top 30 type pitcher.
Yep, I'm 100% with you. I was hoping he'd take that step last year, but we did see the proper growth like you were talking about. So very excited to see where it goes with Bayo. And that's why I wanted to do this show, is there's a lot of interesting arms here that you could justify being the back end of your fantasy roster here. And that's like, there will be disagreements, or we just didn't even talk about the guys potentially. Like, we're not going to talk about Nick Pivetta, very polarizing Red Sox arm.
But
you mentioned another Red Sox arm that we are going to talk about, and it sounds like you're very excited about him, and I get it. And that's one, Cutter Crawford. First off, if you're a pitcher with the name Cutter with a K, you're probably ahead of the game on these things.
Absolutely.
Like you're built for this. that's a win. But I liked him a bit last year. I kind of, he was a up and down waiver wire guy for me. Just couldn't, you know, find his role there. Looks like he has one now, though, Paul. So what's your thoughts on Cutter Crawford?
Props to you for being early on him last year and reaping some of the benefits of that quality season, because I think a lot of times we get allergic to any ERA north of 4 in fantasy, and I get it, because that's not, you know, super useful in your 10 and 12 team leagues, which the vast majority of people play. But if you're putting up a 4.04 ERA for 129 innings, there's a lot of good starts within that. Plus, he put up an excellent whip at 111. Cutter Crawford had a 19% strikeout minus walk. That is a wonderful foundation to build upon. 26% K, 7% walk. I love this guy. Everything I said about Bayo, I think just as much, if not more, for Cutter Crawford, because he's already shown the strikeout. So I really think there's a chance that Cutter Crawford could jump up and be a top 25 starter this year. I think the reins are going to be off innings-wise. He's 28 through 129 innings last year. There's no need to baby him as long as he's healthy. He's pitching. I love him this year. Jeff Zimmerman, again, if you're listening, you shut your mouth and don't you dare touch my Cutter Crawford.
Yeah, up to 220 in OCs, that's probably going to be a lot of fun in your mains. That's all I'm going to say. That's probably
going to really pop it up. He's going to be expensive. I think in the main, he's up to 205 in the 8 mains that have already happened. So I know I'm going to have to pay top dollar. But hey, you draft a guy all winter. For me, I don't then get cautious because their price went up. Like if I'm drafting one of the darlings, I don't want him on all my, like, you know, lower dollar teams. They're not lesser teams. They matter, and I want to win them. But I'm not going to draft this guy on 8 teams, and then it comes my biggest team for $1,700 that I'm then going to jump off just because the price is a bit higher. So 100%. if it costs me a pick 180, then it costs me pick 180. I love Cutter Crawford.
That's why we know the player pool. That's why you know where you can bob and weave, and you get your guys, and you fill the rest of your team out. Very simple is not the right word, but if you put the time in, it becomes easier. Let's put it that
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Yes, that's a great way to put it.
All right. Kyle Harrison, ADP 224. This has been slowly climbing as well. Mm-hmm. I've planted a flag on him. I'm very, very in on him this year. I understand the concerns many people have. You might have them. So I'm curious to hear what you have to say. But I love Kyle Harrison this year, especially at the price point. innings could be a slight concern, but he got stretched out to over 100 innings last year, so I'm not as worried about that. But I'll let you have the floor first. What's your thoughts on Kyle Harrison?
Electric arm, but I do share some of the concerns. I will tell you one thing I actually really liked about his debut last year. It was only 35 innings, right? So we don't make anything too much out of 35 innings one way or another. But I like that he came up and he didn't walk guys. 7.5% rate, call it 8, we round up here. So 8% rate, that's about league average. And he still managed a 24% strikeout rate, which isn't amazing, but it's not terrible considering he only had a 9% swinging strike rate. So a lot of numbers there. Bottom line was, it looked like he had a concerted effort, Kyle Harrison, to not walk guys and still was able to generate enough strikeouts to not be a total flop there. And I thought he was pretty impressive because I thought he was going to be a guy who comes up, walks the yard, strikes out the other guys that he doesn't walk, and is just super volatile. And he actually wasn't that. So I wonder if he learned a bunch, even in that 35 innings there, to say, hey, I can kind of take a step forward with my walk rate. Honestly, I'll take a 9 to 10% walk rate. That's worse than average. 8% is average. I'll take 9 to 10%. Get the Ks back up. That ballpark can protect you. I generally trust the Giants. I've been a little bit tepid on him, so I'm ready to hear you kind of talk him up even more. But I love the arm talent. For me, I was looking at him as more of a 25 guy where I would just kind of sit on the sidelines this year. But if he breaks out, then the price is going to be super high next year too. So this might be your last chance to get Kyle Harrison at a nice fair price. So can he really break out this year and be like a top 30 type, you think?
If he really top gets 40? It, yes. 40, yes. He's a top 40-ish pitcher for me. I like him that much. And it's a few things you mentioned. First off, like I said, 100 innings last year between the minors and the bigs. So we could probably get 130-ish, 140, who knows? Probably 130, play it safe with the kid. But when he got called up, I was most concerned with how deep he'd go into games. He was going 5 innings as long as he didn't go stupid with the walks, which only happened a couple times. That was a plus to me. You mentioned the low walk rates. That was something I banged the drum on when he got called up last year. Everyone was like, oh, he walks too many guys, all this stuff. And I said, yes, early last season he did. As he kept going farther into the season, the walks kept slowly coming down, and then we saw that continue in the bigs. That's awesome. You get to hang out with Logan Webb. This was a new one because it just happened. How cool would it be to let him sit next to Blake Snell and learn how to properly walk guys / strike out guys? Just a concept that might take place there. So the talent, I think, is you can't really deny the talent. Now you have the right, you know, maybe mindset, and you can mold him a little more. I'm going to take the chance at this point in the draft. That's where I'm at is, you know, by now this is like your 6th, 7th starter, hopefully, maybe 5th if you waited. So you should already have a pretty good base on your starting rotation. Start taking some chances here. Because why, like, honestly, Kikuchi could go, we'll talk about him next. Kikuchi could throw more innings, but tell me who is the more volatile pitcher out of the two.
It's Kikuchi, and like, I do not necessarily trust his newfound home run suppression. So that does worry me. And listen, you could not tailor make a better fit than Blake Snell being the guy that kind of brings Kyle Harrison along. Lefty, live arm, who's had walk issues. Hello, that is just completely perfect. And so between him and Logan Webb kind of teaching him the ins and outs, Webb talking about the control, Snell telling him how to kind of manipulate things with your lack of control, could be the winning combination there. And I like that. I like where your head's at.
We'll see. It's just a spec thing. Again, we can drop these guys if they don't work. That's the beauty of this point in the draft. Yusei Kikuchi, ADP 226. Some people are still high on him. I am just going to be like, congrats on a great year. I've moved on. Where are you at, Kikuchi?
Again, in lockstep here. I'm sure we'll have some that we disagree on and we can debate back and forth, but I'm too skeptical about the home run suppression. It was great, and I agree with you. Pat him on the back and pat those that stuck with Kikuchi and say, hey, you got some nice run there. I don't know if it's legit because even in the year where he, quote unquote, fixed the home runs, it was still a 1.5 homer nine. It's just that in the summer he had it down, I think, too closer to like 1.25, which was good enough to succeed. He's always had a live arm. It came to fruition last year, cut the walk rate down. That was actually probably the biggest gain, but he still had a 1.27 whip. That's pretty high. And if you play 10 and 12 teamer, that's not that appealing. So it's just not a guy for me. I'd rather take the shot on all these younger guys that we talked about ahead of him. All to a T. McKenzie, Fought, Sanchez, Bayo, Crawford, Harrison, all of them. And in fairness, they're all going ahead of him. But I'd rather just take one of those guys, skip Kikuchi at his spot, and maybe even jump to the next set here that we're going to talk about. He's just not a guy that I jump in on.
Yep, 100% with you. curious to hear your thoughts here. Kenta Maeda, I've heard some very smart people loving Kenta Maeda. I've heard other people like, 104 innings last year, didn't pitch in 2022. We know he's going to spend time on the IL. What are we doing with Kenta Maeda? Not paying a premium, though. So where are you at on him?
Exactly. And that not paying a premium is why I'm in. And listen, everyone knows, or not everyone, people that don't know me, I'm a huge Tigers fan. But my homerism stops short in fantasy. I'm trying to win, not just pick my guys on the Tigers. And so I'm not just picking on Kenta Maeda because he's a Tiger, but I look at, once you get to a certain point in the draft, and the cutoff kind of changes depending on your league depth, but you get to a certain point where you're no longer looking at guys for the full season. You're looking at guys in 3, 4, 6 week type increments. And I think Maeda is somebody that you look at in like a 5 to 6 week increment. Can I get a month, month and a half out of him? And then I'll go from there. If something happens, I might have to cut him because he's hurt, and I'll just kind of keep working through things. Right now, I'm looking at him as somebody that I don't need to worry about August. I don't need to worry about July with Kenta Maeda right now. Try to get me to Memorial Day and I'll worry about things there. The skills are always strong with him. 21% strikeout minus walk last year. Everything's in track on track this spring at 23%. The swing strike rate's up. I'll take my shot on Kenta Maeda and ride him while he's healthy. If I happen to get lucky and he can pitch 135, 140 innings, great. If I only get 68 and then I have to cut him, but it was a good 68, I'll take it. The only rotten thing that happened last year was a 10 earned run outing. And then beyond that, once he came back from that, Kenta Maeda was awesome down the stretch. So he's a guy that is still very good. He's old, but that's baked into the price. I'm just not worried about taking him. I have no problem taking that shot and just worrying about him as a short-term type of guy. It's a thing I call team streamer, and it's not some novel concept that I just put a name to it. A guy that I'm going to stream up and down my roster, I'm not going to kick him off the roster like you do with a normal streamer. He's just somebody that I'm going to spot start over the year. You don't set it and forget it with Maeda. You try to pick your spots carefully.
No, that makes a ton of sense. When you talk to team streamers, one person that I always use as my description, he's your gardener, Paul. Kyle Gibson is a guy that,
yes,
he's a team streamer.
He's a perfect team streamer. Yeah. He goes to Miami and Pittsburgh for a week. You start him. But then you can keep him because then in 2 weeks he gets, you know, Colorado on the road again or something.
Yep. That's a dude. So yeah, Kenta is a guy I haven't been in on yet. Like I said, smart people. The more I listen, I'm like, okay, I see your argument at least. I see your point behind it. Like I had draft cheat Pete Christensen on last week. He used a similar argument of like a Chris Sale or, yeah, he'll probably get hurt this year, but if it's 75 great innings or good innings, I'll take that and I'll move on. I'll work with that. And that's a philosophy that I know not everybody has, but makes sense if you learn how to work the waiver wire. So totally understand that concept as well. The Miami Marlins, they've been reeling when it comes to keeping a starting five intact. So AJ Puck, come on down. It's kind of ironic the way the A's are just becoming one of the worst organizations in baseball. And the Marlins 1-2 might be Lizardo and Puck. So that is really, really funny for those that go way back to the days in Oakland. But A.J. Puck having a pretty good spring, stretching him out. What are our thoughts on him at pick 239?
I will say I just recorded a podcast today with our good friend Nick Pollock for something that, you know, a new project that we've got. Or at least
another new project for Nick Pollock. That's right. It ain't so.
Can you believe it? It's actually a project that we've done before, but now it's kind of siphoned off into its own thing as opposed to just being part of our normal feeds. But anyway, we were talking AJ Puck and I was like, you know, I've been burned by him in the past. I'm not in on this. And he actually sold me. And under the same notion that we were just talking about earlier, because I brought up like the innings, and he's like, well, who cares? Get him now. And if you get 50 innings out front, then you worry about things, you know, take it step by step after that. Just what I was saying about Kenta Maeda. And so I was like, you know what? You're right. AJ Puck showed enough, especially last year, by the way, had major control improvements that we had never seen from him. Still missed a ton of bats at the same time. If this works for 6 weeks for you and then something happens, he gets hurt again or whatever, that is okay. Don't worry about all these guys past pick 225 or whatever, trying to map out 6 months for them. We're just not good enough to know who's going to last for those 6 months. Look at them as like a super waiver pickup that you're going to trust for the first 2 months of the season. And then you take it from there. If they're still kicking and things are going well, great. You keep them. But if not, you move on. And I think AJ Puck fits into that. I'm impressed. And by the way, they're not going to baby him either. He's 28. Yep. He's been around the block. pitch till you can't anymore. This is, as Nick put it, this is his last chance to show that AJ Puck can be something, and I think it's really intriguing. So I like the AJ Puck, and I just got sold this morning on him.
Yeah, well, I'm glowing. Now you're on. See, we would have. I blame Nick. We could have a disagreement.
We could have had a big disagreement. Now, exactly.
No. Leave it to Nick, peacekeeper, like usual.
That's right.
I love the upside. Like, this is those gambles, I think, pays off. And one thing I've preached forever on my shows is, if I'm going to take guys late, it doesn't always work out because you don't have the choice, but give me a guy with strikeout upside. AJ Puck's got that in spades. Like, he's got all that. So, yeah, I like the idea of AJ Puck. The ballpark works with AJ Puck. Maybe it is only 100 or so innings of it. Who knows? But like you said, I'll take my chance at this point and see where it goes, because the Marlins are desperate. We have some listener questions on a couple other Marlins later. We'll get to them. But, it's pretty rough in the streets these days. Mackenzie Gore, ADP of 248. My goodness, Mackenzie Gore got shut down last year because he hit his innings, so it wasn't because he was hurt or anything. Mm-hmm. He had a pretty decent year, I'd say, in his first full run. Hiccups, of course. Those were there. Walks being one of them. So what are your thoughts on Mackenzie Gore hitting into 2024?
You know, he fits in what we're talking about high upside, a guy who can miss bats. And if you want to take your shot with him, I totally get it. I'm a bit more tepid on him, though, because of the big home run issue that we saw last year. Now, part of that might just be an 18% homer to fly ball that was like a little bit unlucky, but he is a heavy fly ball guy, too. So that does kind of go hand in hand for Gore, that he contributes to the potential of a high homer to fly ball rate. And so that makes me a little bit nervous on him. I think it's one of these ones where I'm like, I respect why people want to do it, just like you were saying with Maeda. Like, you get the case, but you're not necessarily in on it. I just don't know that Mackenzie Gore, even though he's only 25, so he's not some old guy who can't improve, but I just don't know that he's ever going to walk enough or bring his walk rate down enough to where his whip is going to be a potential asset. And if he's not giving you ratios along with the Ks, is he a one category guy? Because we know he's not getting wins. You know, Washington's not going to take some big jump up this year. So you got to get at least one of the two ratios to go with the Ks, or else he's just not bringing enough. I think Mackenzie Gore is somebody that I could probably spot start in DFS that I, you know, on a given night in a matchup that I like, but I'm not really that interested in the fantasy market because there's so many guys around this area that I'd much rather take.
Yeah, this is a name I've gone back and forth on a lot this offseason. And I like a lot of other pitchers better in this range. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to Mackenzie Gore, like when I've looked at him, you know, we talked about you lower the home run back, even if it's the 9.2%, cut it in half. Amazing. The things that'll happen in that regard, obviously. And if the walks can decrease, which would be great. Like, I watched Mackenzie Gore and what he reminds me of, and obviously much younger, but it feels a lot like a Robbie Ray vibe before Ray figured it out.
Yes.
So, like I said it like a month ago when we were doing starting pitches with Bloomfield and Bubba and the Bloom, I was like, if you ever were going to pick this year's Robbie Ray, ADP, all these things, I wouldn't be – like it could be Mackenzie Gore. Like, mm-hmm. It really could be. If he – it's asking for a lot from a 25-year-old. I get that. Sure. So it's kind of one of those things, if you want to go for a ceiling play, I could see the Gore. Just know the letdown could be tremendous at the same time. Where these other guys we've talked about, even like 100 innings of Kenta Maeda, would probably be a lot safer than Mackenzie Gore.
Yes.
Some of these other picks going even higher, obviously higher for a reason. The guy we're going to talk about next, big fan of. Like, there's a lot of things. But Gore, I think, has that just such a wide array of possibilities. Mm-hmm. That makes him range very of outcomes intriguing in this range.
Yeah, massive. I love the Robbie Ray comp. And he was a guy that I wasn't terribly in on. And then even when he was breaking out, I was skeptical. And then he won a Cy Young, and I was like, okay, so I got that one wrong. Sorry, guys. But that's a good call out, that he could take those steps forward. It's just going to be on someone else's team. So good luck to you if you're taking Gore. I prefer this next guy too, though. We're going to have more agreement because I love this guy.
Yep, Griffin Canning on a lot of my teams. ADP 268. And if he keeps being this cheap, he's going to be on the rest of my team. So it's just the way it's going to go. I'll let you have the floor. I've talked about him probably every show I've been on. So it's
all yours. I mean, you know, one of the things I've actually talked about with Justin on our podcast is that I like way too many Angels starters. Like, that's never a great idea, but I like.
You got the hat. You might as well rock it.
Exactly. I wore it on purpose knowing that we were going to talk about Canning and that I was going to bring up how much I love this rotation weirdly. But Canning is my favorite of the bunch. He has jumped above Ty Detmers. Oh my God, what a reference. That former quarterback guy. Yeah. He's jumped above Reed Detmers and Chase Silseth and Patrick Sandoval to become my favorite Griffin Canning has. And he goes back to what we were talking about with Fought and Sanchez. Everything's in place except for the home run rate, but it is fixable. You can fix a home run rate. He's going to have to do that to really be a fantasy asset this year. 1.6 is not going to cut it. That was what he was last year and for his career. But he got 127 innings. That was a big jump over his previous career high of 90, at least at the major league level. And I really like to see that from Griffin Canning. 19% strikeout minus walk is very strong. The walk rate down to 7%. There's a good foundation here. Bring that home run rate down to like 1.1, 1.2, if not below one, of course. But even at 1.1, 1.2, I can live with that because he doesn't walk guys, which means a lot of those home runs will probably be solos and they won't crush him too much. And I think Griffin Canning can be somebody who puts up like a 3.5 ERA and a 1.18 whip. And even if the wins aren't there, because I don't know how good this Angels team is going to be, and the safe bet is to say they're not going to be very good. But even if you're not getting a ton of wins, you get quality ratios and enough strikeouts to be dangerous. And he could probably work his way to like a low double digit win total if that happens with the home run rate. So I like Griffin Canning.
Yep. I have nothing else to add. I've been perfect. All over this. Love the strikeout upside. It's young players, and you see this a lot with young players. It's either walks and or home runs. Like it's what happens with these young guys. You take that next step, big things happen. Hopefully it happens with Canning. Really curious your thoughts on D.L. Hall, because when he was with Baltimore still, everyone was like, this is the next greatest thing. Gets traded to Milwaukee for about a week, still the next greatest thing. Then it's kind of been crickets on the D.L. Hall front of things. I have zero shares of D.L. Hall. He's usually with most really young guys, you got to like prove it to me for at least a year, or at least got to see something. So I'm out on D.L. Hall, but maybe you're in. What's your thoughts on Hall?
Yeah, it's fitting that he's on the DL, as the kids say. Actually, I don't even know if the kids say that anymore, but that's on the down low. You know, his draft price is on the down low, at least 273. So he is a guy that can't hurt you, but I put him more in that Mackenzie Gore camp where if he breaks out on somebody else's team, I tip my cap and I say, cool, because he is an intriguing guy. I respect a lot of what Milwaukee does. And even though they cry poor, you know, I don't believe any team that cries poor, by the way, all these guys are rich. But even if, you know, they are playing this kind of, you know, bargain basement type of team, I think they put together a decent lineup. And until Devin Williams got hurt, I really, really liked their bullpen. Now I'm obviously pretty tepid on it. Although don't sleep on Abner Uribe being that guy. Joel Piamps is probably the biggest pick right now, but I like Abner Uribe. But the rotation outside of Peralta is really sketchy. And I don't think D.L. Hall is going to do enough this year to really make a fantasy impact. I think it could be upwards of 100 innings. And again, that's not why I'm against him, because even if he gave you a month of quality work, that would be enough. But I just don't know that the control is going to be there. I do like that, similar to what we said with Kyle Harrison, his major league sample last year for D.L. Hall did include a great walk rate, 6%. That's impressive, but that's in the bullpen. That's shorter stints. Are they even going to trust him to go 5+ innings, or is he going to be one of these 3-4 inning starters? Too many question marks on D.L. Hall. I'm with you. I'd rather see something than take the plunge here. Just not going to be a guy I have.
Yeah, like I understand there's going to be question marks with most young pitchers, but you mentioned D.L. Hall's list of question marks a lot longer than other ones. So
yes,
I'll take a quick pass. It's a pass for me, dog. let's go back to Detroit, your team here, and talk some Reese Olson, who at times last year was kind of a fancy waiver wire name out there. Then he kind of fluttered a bit at times.
Mm-hmm.
Comes back to spring, looking pretty good again. So ADP of 275, are we back in on Reese Olson?
We are. I'm really, really, really trying to keep things in check with my Tigers in terms of my excitement. But the fact that they have legit pitching depth and some big time starters at the front end, namely Tarek Skubal, who of course is going very, very high this year. But even our five starter, Reese Olson, is somebody that you can really get encouraged by. He's a guy who threw just over 140 total innings last year. If you add AAA and the majors, I think it was like 141 for him. That's a nice total. That means that at age 24, he does not have to be heavily babied to get to, say, 160. And that's a full season there for you. You can get through 30 turns like that. And there was a lot to like in his debut season. That whip was really nice at 112. And I think it was Uncle Ted in the chat who was saying he likes to go for low whip guys late. Somebody like Reese Olson can be that guy that can help your whip. And it is hard to find whip late. It's kind of like the batting average of pitching, where you usually have these guys that have live arms and high whips. Well, Reese Olsen is a guy who maybe doesn't have the livest arm, although don't sleep on a nice 24% K rate. That's perfectly solid. Mm-hmm. But even if he doesn't raise that and he's just under a strikeout per inning, if he's giving you an under 115 whip, that is very valuable at this draft slot. So I do like Reese Olsen.
Yep. The fact he's coming on strong, I didn't know where he stood in the barking order, I guess, for the five-man rotation. As spring has developed, that has changed in my mind, so we're good. Real quick, so you got Kenta Maeda, you got Reese Olsen, obviously Tarik Skubal. Mm-hmm. Flaherty's looking pretty good.
Yeah,
you got Casey Mize and Matt Manning. How do you see that? How do you see that rotation playing out as a whole for fantasy?
I think Manning is going to be the guy who breaks camp, and then you're going to have guys like Casey Mize and Sawyer Gibson Long who are going to be the backups there. And then don't sleep on Jackson Jobe as a summer call-up type of guy. And he could be one
Nick.
Of the...
Okay, Nick. I was kidding.
No, it's so funny you said that because we talked about him. He's like, what do you think about Jackson Jobe? I was like, well, I'm excited for him in the summer. But yeah, Sawyer Gibson Long, Casey Mize, and Jackson Jobe give us real depth. And I'm a wee guy, y'all. I mentioned this on my pod with Nick, like people who cry about saying we for your favorite team. No, I'm not employed by them. No, they don't pay me. I don't give a crap. They're my favorite team. So we have a lot of pitching depth and I'm very excited by it, but I do think Manning is going to be the one who has that spot with Olsen. Mize will come up later. You know, when they have an injury of some sort, Sawyer Gibson Long will be the next guy. And then Jobe should be like kind of the midsummer guy, maybe around the All-Star break, because there's no need to rush him. Unless the Tigers find themselves competing, which I'm not predicting. It'd be great, but I'm not predicting it. Unless that happens, they can slow play Jobe a little bit and worry about him as a second half contributor. But I really like Olsen, and even though he's not on the list, if we can get to post 300 guys, even if we can't, I want to say I love Matt Manning. He's showing some improvements in spring. Velo up, slider looking tighter. He's another guy I like too. So I like Olsen and Manning. If you miss out on Olsen, don't worry. Just get Matt Manning about 50 picks later.
Yep, I'm a big Matt Manning fan. It's been one of those. I'm always excited when he gets called up, and then it just something always seems to happen. The banana peel gets found, and it looks like hopefully we're good this go around. So I'm with you. Like, he's on my queue in some slow drafts I have right now, getting around 25, give or take. So he's coming up on the old board to get picked here. And as Uncle Ted says, good time to be a Tigers fan. So,
it really is. I'm excited.
You could see this coming a little bit of ways the last couple of years with the trades. Like, they're actually starting to do things. You're like, and the draft picks, like, they're picking the right bats, doing these things. Like, okay, it's coming. It's there. And it looks like you're maybe one more year, but you're real close to making
this. The only thing right now, and I like the guy we got, but I know some people, if we're doing anything in, say, June or July this year, that Max Clark over Wyatt Langford pick is really going to start to bother people, because Langford would, of course, you know, be somebody who could contribute this year. And Max Clark is a youngster who's not going to be around for a little while. So I like the Clark pick when it happened. I still co-sign it, but you might see some people saying, imagine if we had Wyatt Langford right now. How crazy would that be? So, but either way, I love where Scott Harris has this team going. I'm very excited.
Definitely, most definitely. A few more here. Louis Varland up to ADP 279. That's going to keep climbing, folks. The hype train is fully behind Louis Varland, especially with the recent news that Tony Disco is likely going to miss the whole season with his injury. So you got Varland coming in here who he threw about almost 145 innings, give or take, last year. So he's ready to rock and roll. There was some very good times with Louis Varland, some rough times with Louis Varland, but the hype train has never been bigger, it feels like, Spore. So what are we doing with Varland this year?
Hopefully you stuck with him. You know, he's been a fantasy industry darling this offseason. And if you did if you are a sicko like Bubba and I, and you've been doing drafts throughout the winter and into the spring here, hopefully you were getting Varland shares, even though there was this Tony Disco talk. And I understood why, like, okay, they're going to trust the veteran guy as long as they can, whatever. It didn't stop me from drafting Varland though. So I've got some shares, but the price is going to keep going up. You said 275 or 279 on our sheet here. Yep. It's 250 at the main event, these first eight main events. It's going to push up close to 200 this weekend, I bet. His min pick was 199. If you love Louis Varland, you better get comfortable with something in the 185 to 220 range, or else you're not going to get him. And if you like Bailey Ober and Joe Ryan, you should like Louis Varland, because he's just like them. Great Ks, great walk rate, too many homers. So he's got to fix the homers. But we've seen it with these two that they can do that. It's a profile that is working for the Twins. I'm in on Louis Varland. There is risk because of the homers, but I'm going to take the upside there. Even at 220 or like I said, just inside the top 200, he's still a guy I'm interested in.
We had a young pitcher with home run problems? No. We don't have that. Yeah, Varland's interesting, but you mentioned that kind of around 185 to 225. So if you're on the draft, you're on the clock on Saturday.
Okay.
Cutter Crawford or Louis Varland?
Cutter. Got to go Cutter there. Yeah. I knew where you were going right there, and I'm like, yeah, I'm sticking with boy Cutter. I'm sticking with Sanchez. But I will say it gets a little dicier on, you know, McKenzie fought Bayo Varland. That's a quartet there that I'm kind of measuring my risk. I'm actually still going to go Canning because I think I can wait on him. Now, if he jumped up into that group, that would be interesting. But no one likes Canning. You know, I think
it's weird. He's not moving at all in ADP this year.
Yeah, we're on a bit of an island. I think PJ said that he's got shares too. Like the three of us and maybe a few others, like nobody's going too crazy about it because the Angels are toxic for people. So that helps us.
Yeah, that does in a weird way. Chris Paddock will stick in Minnesota here. They want him to get about 140 innings. They want him for the end of the season. Take whatever you want out of that information. We know he used to be on paper, like looking to be one of the next best things. Injuries have derailed Chris Paddock. I'm rooting for him, but I'm staying away. Thoughts on Paddock?
I'm not against it, but I am closer to you. I'm going to straddle the fence here a little bit and say like, yeah, I can see the case, and I do have a couple shares, so I don't want to say like I'm totally out because that would be a lie. But he is somebody that like I agree that they're going to kind of play with him a little bit where it's like, oh, he takes 2 weeks off randomly when he's not hurt just to massage his innings because they have designs on going to the playoffs again, and I understand that. So they got to work through the full 6+ months of the season, right? Especially because they're going to want Paddock in the playoff rotation too, generally speaking, or at least in the playoff bullpen if he's not in the rotation. So they're going to have to kind of massage 140 innings for 6+ months, and that will probably require some down periods, some skip starts type of deal. So if that's not something that you like to manage, then Paddock's probably not a guy for you. But there is some intrigue here. And again, I've been really trusting Minnesota with what they do. I mentioned how they have this profile of great strikeout, nice walk rate, but a little bit of a home run issue or a lot bit of a home run issue with Ober and Ryan and Varland. Paddock can fit into that same mold and they know how to work with that. So I like that. Even though I understand the hype on the Tigers and KC, I still think getting guys in the Central makes sense. I love my Tigers, but I'm not going to be benching quality starters against them until they prove that I need to do that, which will take some time. So somebody like a Paddock, like a Varland, I'm going to easily start them against all of their Central foes and then against a lot of other teams too. So I'm tepid on Paddock. His price is fair. So if I miss out on a handful of these guys here that we both like, then I would land on him. But our next guy is one of my faves. He's one of my big breakouts. His price is also going up though, because he got his job guaranteed.
Yes, this is why I put him on here, because 297. I hope you drafted this past weekend.
Yeah.
Gavin Stone, this was the guy that was the hype. He was the guy last draft season. Had some issues up and down a few times. Didn't play well in the minors, didn't play well in the bigs, but the spring has looked electric again. Just faced a team in Korea that just dominated. He just dominated them, and now he's the fifth starter for the Dodgers. So where are you thinking? You like Stone, so tell me why you like Stone, and where do you think he lands now?
So I think you're at least looking at 250 plus. If you're in the main event this weekend or even in your home drafts, whatever it is, it's a cheap way to get into the Dodgers rotation, which is very difficult to do because three of their pitchers are going in like the top 50 picks with Glasnow, Yamamoto, and Bobby Miller. And so, you know, it's very difficult to get in there. And then you got to maybe get like a Buehler if you have IL slots or a Paxton. Paxton's another guy, by the way. Don't get hung up on the fact that he's not going to pitch all year. Who cares? Can you get 6 good weeks out of him, 4 good weeks? Gavin Stone's a guy I do think could pitch all year though. And he's a young guy. And I like young guys that do have good changeups because it helps them get opposite handers out. Now, Nick and I were talking about this and he says, I understand what you're saying, but that's more important for lefties getting out righties because they're going to face more. And I was like, that is fair. And he said, I don't like changeup only guys that don't have anything else for guys. And I said, that's also totally fair. However, as you mentioned, Bubba, this spring we've seen the fastball and the slider look markedly better for Gavin Stone. And so that just strengthens my resolve on this guy. He got locked in as the fifth starter. There's so much to like here. He's a guy that can put up like a 4.5 ERA, a baseline quality start, 6 innings, 3 runs consistently and get wins because of the team that he's on. So even if he's going 5 innings, 4 runs sometimes, which isn't a good outing, right? That's a bad ERA, but you can still snake a win from that. You pair him with some of these guys guys like Griffin Canning who might put up the good ratios but might not get the wins, and together, like, that's why you're building a rotation, right? You're actually putting these pieces together. One of the things I did badly last year was I had too many guys that were the Griffin Canning's types. I had all these great ratios, great strikeouts, couldn't buy a win to save my life, Bubba. And then I go back and look, and I got all these Angels, and I got the good time. I had Matt Manning on the team. You know, I had all these guys on garbage teams. You got to throw your Gavin Stones in there, or even your Chris Paddocks, who are on the quality teams. So I do love Gavin Stone. I think you're paying at least 250 this weekend. You might be prepared to pay 2.25 if you really like him and you really want to go out and get him.
Great point on the wins as well, though, because as we get – well, the joke I make, hitters, pitchers, whoever, the deeper you get in drafts, it's bad teams. That's why they're down here. Like,
exactly. That's a great call. Yeah.
There's always the saying, there's good fantasy players on bad teams, but it seems like you mentioned so many Tigers, so many Angels. You could probably, back in the day, Orioles were down here, but Twins are down here. If you go offensively, tons of Pirates go late. Like, you have, there's a pool of these types of situations that they all just kind of hang out because people, like, just not up to – they can't sometimes construe real life from fantasy when they're doing these things, which I'll take it all day long. Before we get into listener questions, you did mention post 300. Is there any way that stands out to you that you wanted to hit on post 300? We don't have to, but like Frankie Montas is a guy that's pretty popular. There's many, many more. So anybody else that stands out to you?
I'm a longtime Montas fan. I am allergic to Cincinnati pitchers, though, so I'm going to wish him well from afar and say good luck, good sir. But I will highlight Garrett Crochet. You know, I did my breakouts piece over at Fangraphs, and my post 300 guys, I feel pretty good about those because Stone got locked in as the fifth starter. Garrett Crochet is the opening day starter, and Matt Manning was the other one there. Yeah, I cannot believe Crochet.
First career start is opening day,
but it's against the Tigers. And like I said, I respect my team to be kind of froggy this year, I'm not scared of their offense. So I'm definitely interested in starting Crochet right away. And Nick brought this up on our pod today, and I will reiterate this as his point. With these late lottery tickets, don't get guys that you don't want to start right away, because then you're holding them and you're in this holding pattern. Get guys.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That are easy decisions. Crochet, if you take him with your last pick, start him against the Tigers and see what happens. If it blows up in your face, okay, you take a little bit of a hit for four innings, throw him off the team. If he does well, you bench him for the next start because it's Atlanta, but then you come back around against Cleveland after that. So I like Garrett Crochet. That's the one I really wanted to hit with Matt Manning. Gavin Stone was my other one, so those are my three. And like you said, Stone's not even past 300 anymore.
Yep, and Crochet probably creeps up in the main events with the news of opening day. So, but yeah, I like it. I saw Sarah Lang's put out, Crochet becomes the ninth pitcher over the last like 110 years in baseball to make his first career start on opening day. That's ridiculous.
That is nuts.
Maybe 119 years. Sorry, not 110. Just stupid stuff. Before we do listener questions, I had one question for you. Now that we kind of talked about this realm, it's a lot of guys you like, I like, and you know, there's some 300s we like. And one thing I've noticed this year and in recent years, I know you guys have talked about the globs. It's like you have your early round guys, then there's like a little break, and then another glob, and this was kind of its own glob, and that's why it was a conversation deciphering your glob. How are you attacking pitching this draft season? Is the roundabout question.
That's a wonderful question. And it's a situation where if I can't get one of like my top 10, I kind of am waiting a bit. And I don't know, man, I really, really wish I could find this article because it's a little bit dated, but I'd like to update it because somebody did a study and kind of it was around like SP, I don't know the exact number, let's say like SP 15 to SP 25 or 30. Was one of the most fraught territories of guys. And it makes sense too, because what are those? Those are the guys that popped off last year, but they're not quite aces. And so you're paying the premium for what they did last year. And look at some of these guys that we have. And don't get me wrong, I like some of these guys, but talk about how scary my 9 through 20 are. Who do you really, really trust here? Tyler Glasnow, Bobby Miller. I love Bobby Miller, but like he's my number 10. Like that seems crazy. Tarek Skubal, Grayson Rodriguez. Those three or those four had a combined what? 250 innings last year. It wasn't that few, but it's such a small number. Logan Gilbert, Zach Eflin, Yamamoto, Fried, Gausman, Nola, Gallen. That is my 9 through 20. And I ranked them there because I believe in those guys to a certain degree, but that is a scary 9 through 20. So if I can't get one of my top 8, I generally kind of wait. I've only really been taking Bobby Miller. He's the one I like the most there. Zach Eflin, I'm pretty big on as well. Like there's a couple pockets there, but it's a scary group. So then I usually wait to get into my, say, 25 through 50 glob. And that's a glob that I really do like. And what we mean by glob, and you might've heard this on the CBS broadcast, by the way, and listen, we've had this, this was a thing that Scott's viewers were like, hey, you stole this for sport. He didn't steal anything. Yeah. We happened upon a same concept. I didn't make it up either. I just gave it a name. It's this notion that because they're ranked 25 through 50, the talent is not that different. Your 25 could be your 50 and your 50 could be your 25. That's the point of globs. It's these talent pools that because we do ordinal ranks, one to whatever, it looks like there's these discrepancies that don't really exist. Think about all the guys we just talked about. Gavin Stone was the last guy at 298. How different is he than Tristan McKenzie at 194? He's not.
True.
He's not that different, except that McKenzie has one great year under his belt that he's shown it. So anyway, I like to get into the 25 through 50 glob there and really get my first two or three guys and start building my rotation. Ideally with an anchor at the front end. I'd like to get myself a George Kirby, a Logan Webb, Luis Castillo, if I can't get Strider or Burns at the top, of course. But then I'm really working in the middle there, and then I'm going to attack the tier that we just talked about for 4, 5, 6, 7 guys, finishing out my rotation and my reserve guys as well. So I don't love the super early pitching. I think it's very scary right now. And that includes my boy Skubal.
Yeah, no, I have zero Skubal, unfortunately. Like, I love the talent, but I'm at that price point. Like,
it's so expensive. Yeah,
it's insane. Like, I'm rooting for him, and it's just one of those.
Me I'll too.
Like, in my OCs, I've been comfortable going 3-4 bats before I even touch a pitcher.
I don't blame you at all.
Because, like you said, that, and you nailed the reason why I've been doing it, is you get after those, like, I think it's like 7 or 8 guys. It becomes a lot of similar, like, uh-ohs, like, well, this is really good, really bad. And then it kind of, you get a lot of that same stuff later on. So, yeah, I'm with you when we break it down. So I was just curious how you're attacking it. Funnier pitching, a lot of optimism in these later rounds, which also kind of leans me to take bats early. All right, let's do some listener questions here, and then we will head on out on day. If my phone wants to unlock. There we go. This happens when you have the old iPhone model.
Do you have a home button on your phone?
No, not that old. I'm close. So. It's close. I have the 10, so we're close.
Oh, okay. You actually aren't that far from it. Yeah, wow.
We're close. Simon P says, can you discuss the best 6, 7, or 8 pitchers to target, guys who are one or more injuries away from making a significant impact? I think we hit on them that range today.
We did.
You kind of highlighted your main guys already, so.
Yeah, and look at my Tigers, right? Like, those guys that they've got, like, there's a lot of bench guys there. Varland would have been one that I absolutely highlighted before the Tony Disco injury. You know, there's certain teams. And listen, we talked about the Dodgers, and we love Gavin Stone and those guys, but, like, Emmett Sheehan will eventually come back. We'll see what happens with the injuries on somebody like a Walker Buehler. Kershaw will eventually be back. I don't recommend really drafting him unless you have like 5+ IL spots that you can really park him. But James Paxton is somebody that they'll eventually use. Like, I think there's some decent guys there that we didn't necessarily get to. But yeah, we highlighted a lot of those types.
Big John Studd, John Legeza asks, who's your favorite 6 starter? We just hit on that. So there you go, Big John. On the YouTube feed here, PJ says, Mize, Olsen, Manning, only 2 spots. Who loses?
It's Mize right now. And that is purposeful only because they just want to kind of stretch, you know, take their time with it. Don't push him in right away because they know that they're not going to get a full season out of him. And they do have some designs on competing a little bit this year. So I think they'd rather have him in the summer if and when Maeda gets hurt or if Jack Flaherty gets hurt or underperforms, which could happen, you know. And, you know, there's no guarantees for Reese Olsen either. And Skubal's had some injury issues. So as good as the Tigers' pitching depth is, there are reasons to have some concerns too. And so they don't want to rush somebody like Mize. And so I think he loses out initially, but I still do like him.
All right. Sleepy Gator asks, I took Colin Ray in the last round of an NFBC 15 teamer. Good call or waste of a pick?
I wouldn't say waste of a pick. It would really depend on what their schedule is. This would go back to what I was saying that Nick pointed out. If you can't use him in that first start or first two starts, then it does lean a little bit toward waste of a pick. And I'm pulling up their schedule here. I'm kind of vamping while I figure that out so that I can see. They go at the Mets and then Minnesota for two. He's probably going to get one of those Minnesota games unless he's in the top three. Although, okay, Roster Resource right now says Colin Ray is the number two starter. So he would get a trip to the Mets.
That's how bad things are in Milwaukee.
Yeah, it is dicey right now for their rotation. So I would be okay. You drafted him, right? So you like, you know, the listener, they like Colin Ray enough to have drafted him. I think if you can't start him at the Mets, then you shouldn't have drafted him because the Mets are an okay team, but they're not too scary in their home ballpark that you shouldn't be able to start even this kind of spot starter type of guy.
Yep, that is a very, very valid point. If you can't start him versus the Mets, probably ain't doing it, period. So, and that's how bad things got in Milwaukee. When I did my team previews in December, Colin Ray was the fifth in that rotation.
I remember when he was the fifth.
Brutal to hear him up to second. Whew. My God. Ross Rodriguez says, not related to pitching, but can I get y'all's opinion on Jackson Merrill? Drafted him with the last pick, just got to action on tomorrow's game, but liking him the more and more. So, you know, he's going to start. He's going to be 20.
Yep.
That's a thumbs up from Sport.
I mean, yeah, you can't see that if you're not watching the video. I just gave a big thumbs up while Bubba was talking. Why not take him with the last pick? We don't know what he's going to become, but you're going to have an easy decision a couple weeks in. If he's flopping all over the place, you can cut him and move on and maybe keep tabs on him for the rest of the season, right? Because this is a guy that, like, if Jackson Merrill comes up, falls on his face early, but you're in a 10 or 12 team, you cut him, but then you just keep an eye on him because he can maybe find his footing as the season goes on. But I've drafted him in two different leagues. I like taking the shot on him. Plus, he's going to have shortstop outfield eligibility. I love the sneaky infield outfield eligibility.
Yep, no, he's big. He joins company of Andrew Jones and Ken Griffey as the only 20-year-olds to make their debut on opening day.
Wow.
So fun stuff there. Mark at Black Coffee 816, wondering where you guys are on Varland. We hit on that already. Mm-hmm. Ronaldo Lopez and Luis Eel, and newly named SP1 Crochet, which you get that as well. So what are your thoughts on Ronaldo Lopez and Luis Eel?
Okay, I love Ronaldo Lopez. He's a guy I cannot quit. And it was part of where I learned, you know, when I was talking with Nick about AJ Puck, and I was like, well, if I stick with Ronaldo Lopez all the time, maybe I should stick with AJ Puck, a guy I love back in Oakland, because now he's getting his chance. So I'm excited about Ronaldo Lopez. I kind of trust the Braves, and we'll see. Doesn't mean every guy that they start is automatically good. They're not a magic team, but they are a smart team, and I think that they're giving a guy with some real stuff an opportunity. So I like Ronaldo Lopez. I think he's a good gamble, and he's an easy decision early, going back to that concept of, like, hey, if he blows up in your face in the first start at the White Sox, then move on. It's funny that he does get to face his old team with his first start. But if he can't do well against them, then feel free to move on. By the way, one start is obviously a tiny sample, but you got to make quick burn and churn decisions with these back end guys. He could blow up in that start and end up still being good. But if you're looking to make easy decisions, Ronaldo Lopez is definitely that. By the way, we were talking about best six starter. It could be Luis Eel because we don't know if he's guaranteed in the rotation yet. Right now we have Clayton Beter penciled in over at Roster Resource. Now that's just Jason's best guess, Jason Martinez, who does Roster Resource. But if Eel gets that job, I am so in on him. But if he's the number six guy, I still like him. You just might have to wait for him a little bit. He is nasty. I like Luis Eel quite a bit. So Eel and Raylo, double cosign.
Yeah, both good. I got plenty of shares of Raylo. Don't have any Eel. But now that he's kind of sneaking in there, I get it, because he has had his streaming moments in the past.
Definitely.
Adam Warner says, should I draft over under 1.5 McGills this year?
Well, Trevor could absolutely be the guy in the closer mix there with Joel Piamps and Abner Uribe. It's kind of a mixed bag there, so I'd probably say just one. I am a sucker for Tyler McGill, and I'm anchored to that beginning of his career where he was really good. And I know that's stupid, by the way. I'm saying that to roast myself. You shouldn't just get anchored on like a good five-star run of somebody early on. But I know he still has talent. Opportunity is there now. And one thing I will say, he's priced to buy. And so that is something that is intriguing about Tyler McGill, is that, like, it doesn't hurt you to take that shot if you believe in him like I do. And his first start should be against my Tigers at home. Again, if you can't start him there, then you're never going to start him. So start him at home against the Tigers. See what happens. If he flops, off the roster.
Yep, just took McGill in round 24 of my slow draft. So, yes, totally, I am on board with that one.
Totally fine at 100%. That price point.
Simon P also asked, do you have any $1 NL only auction targets that you like? I haven't gone down that far in the NL only rabbit hole, but he does have some. There's got to be like Trevor Rogers. He might be more than a buck if he's cheap enough.
Now, I don't know, like, where's Emmett Sheehan going to come in with his health? Like, what kind of NL or what kind of IL spots do you have? He could be interesting, maybe like a Johnny Brito. I haven't been in a single league auction in quite some time, but I'm hoping that maybe these are some useful names. Orion Kerkering has a lot of arm talent. Jeff Hoffman. I'm not anti-Alvarado. It's just that I think that they're going to trust Hoffman to get a lot of saves when it's three righties coming up in the ninth. And Alvarado's going to be the guy getting out Freddie Freeman in the seventh inning with two men on or something, right? That's the one downside about lefty closers is sometimes they get trusted to go in the seventh or eighth inning against the big lefty because you don't know if he's going to come up in the ninth. So I have been looking at Jeff Hoffman a lot. He could probably be a buck in an NL auction. AJ Smith-Shaver was mentioned in the chat by Uncle Ted. I think he's an interesting stash for a buck. Here's one. Tanner Scott looks like garbage this spring. Yes. Andrew Nardi for $1 is another interesting reliever in Miami that I really, really like. I call him Nard Dog. I mentioned I'm an OOTP guy, and I did a Marlins franchise a couple of years ago, and Nard Dog became an absolute monster for me. So I've always had some love for him. So yeah, Andrew Nardi, keep tabs.
Yep, I like Nardi. I have quite a few shares in DCs of Andrew Nardi, so I'm hoping that kind of happens, unfortunately. Scott White is old couch. That's a heck of a name, folks. Basically, he wants to know he can keep Shane Baz for $1, should he?
If you have IL spots, sure. Right? Again, I don't love to invite injury onto my roster, but if you have the IL spots to do it, and I'd say at least five, because if it's only three, he's going to be holding one for a while. So I'm a little bit nervous about it. And by the way, I will point out just on the Nardi thing, he has looked bad in spring as well, PJ, but I feel like he's actually been working on some things, and that's part of why he's struggling, whereas Tanner Scott's struggling because he's not doing well. And I know that's a little bit of a distinction to make, but he is interesting. Anthony Bender is a good spec closer as well. But yeah, going back to Boz, if you got at least four or five IL spots, I'm okay with it. If it's only three, I'm a little bit more suspect.
I'm nervous with Boz. I'm very, very nervous. So you better have room, like Spores said. Stephen Puntini says, thoughts on Max Meyer, possible to get 125 innings from him if he comes up in April. And he might have to, as they don't have much else over there.
Yeah, if Alex Fernandez and Charlie Huff aren't available for them, they might have to turn to him. I mean, it is dicey over there. Max Meyer is somebody I really like. I'm probably looking at him as more of a summer guy or even 2025. I don't know that they're going to go all the way to a buck 25 innings coming off of TJ. Now, the one positive is that he's coming off the extendo rehab where he had like the 18-month recovery, which does make me a little bit easier to go with him. I usually avoid TJ returners, but when it's the 18 plus months, maybe you can be a little bit more interested in him. So I wouldn't expect too much, but Max Meyer's a guy I love long-term. So if you're talking dynasty keeper or anything that you can keep him for 2025, sure. If it's just this year, not so much.
Okay. Anthony Felia says, should I stash Lucas Giolito for $1 for 2025?
No. I was actually in on him this year, so bouncing back price. His price was great. I kind of gave him a pass for getting traded twice and going through a divorce last year, but then now he's out. No, I don't think so.
Mr. Grouch, E-Rod bump in Arizona. Could match Merrill Kelly this year. Thoughts on E-Rod?
Yeah, I think he is basically kind of a left-handed Merrill Kelly and could be just as good as he was, as Kelly was last year. I think it's an interesting 1-2-3 there with Gallen, Kelly, and E-Rod. You know, he's kind of your steady Eddie guy that you just kind of set it and forget it with him in Roto and just look in the end of the season. It should be pretty good. He overperformed his numbers a little bit last year, E-Rod did, but I think he's going to give you volume, solid starts. If he can keep the whip down, right? If it goes all the way back up to the 1-3s that we saw prior to his career or prior throughout his career until this past year, then I am nervous. But if he's still in, like, say, the low 120s with an upper threes whip, ERA, not whip, an upper upper threes ERA, then that works. I like E-Rod. I think he's priced to buy too. He just can't kill you at that price point.
Yep. Big E-Rod fan. I've been clowned for it many times, but I do not care.
I don't know why people clown us for liking him.
Yeah, because Bloomfield likes to clown me. That's what co-hosts do. You know how it goes.
True. My co-host loves clowning
me. You know how it goes.
Lives to clown me.
And then the last question I have here is another one from Mr. Grouch. Wells or Kramer in Baltimore, who you choosing? That's a good question.
That's a very good question. I'm going to lean toward my boy Tyler Wells. I say my boy because he really helped me out last year. He was kind of buried until these injuries came to be with Kyle Bradish and John Means. By the way, you want to talk about somebody that kind of getting back in my good graces? Kyle Bradish threw a bullpen the other day.
I've been stashing him in so many drafts.
I like where you're at with that.
If he doesn't pan out, you drop him the first week.
Exactly. When he got hurt, I said he's off my board because I was scared. I thought this is very, very bad. He's come all the way back around to where he's got thrown a bullpen. Now I'm getting intrigued again. That said, I still like Wells. I think he's very interesting. They parked him last year, which was very weird. I was surprised that he was just completely parked for the second half. But the 119 innings that we did see were great. And he fits that Minnesota profile that we're talking about. Strong Ks, strong walk rate, too many homers. But Baltimore helps him. I love that new wall that they put up there. 1.9 homer 9 is crazy. That can't happen again or else he will not put up another 364 ERA. Bring that down to like 1.3 homer 9. And Tyler Wells can just pile up wins, even if he's giving you a high threes, low fours ERA. I like Tyler Wells. Kramer, I will say Justin did sell me on Kramer being more interested in him than I ever had been because he's refining his stuff and he has a 15% swinging strike rate in spring. So if he can boost his K rate, he's pretty good too. But since you're making me choose one, I am going to stick with Wells.
Kramer's got like a Kyle Gibson vibe to him.
Probably why Very Justin much likes so. Him. Very but, much so.
Yeah, I love Wells. The strikeout upside is tremendous. Before they signed Kimbrel, I'm like, just put Wells at closer, guys. Let's figure this out. But
that could have absolutely worked.
So we'll see how this works. But Paul, on that note, we will wrap things up. So once again, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
You can find me over on Twitter at Spore. I've been getting in a little bit more with the season coming up. I do love chatting baseball over there. I'm also on Twitch, twitch.tv/Spore, where I stream video games. But even if you're not a video gamer, come through, hang out. We're talking baseball. I will be streaming my main event this weekend, Saturday afternoon. So if you want to come hang out and watch me draft my main event, I'll be doing that. And then, of course, at Fangraphs, you can find all my fantasy work up there. It is fangraphs.com/rotographs. I said fantasy.fangraphs.com earlier, which I think still works, but fangraphs.com/rotographs. All my rankings are up there. You can find my starting pitchers. I'm gonna have another update of those before the weekend comes up. My sleepers, my busts, they're all up there. And then of course the podcast with Justin. We had a few days off because he was traveling to New York, but I think we're gonna be recording tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday. So 3 days in a row coming up.
Can't wait. Two of the best in the business right there. One of the best in the business right here, folks. Mr. Paul Spore, thanks for joining me, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, Bubba. It was awesome talking with you.
Always. Erases Bench with Bubba, episode 662. Catch you all next time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.